This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. If you're hiring, with Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on your short list of qualified candidates using an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/NPR podcast.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Vice President Mike Pence says his office, quote, is above such acts. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said, it's not mine. Denials coming from many corners of the Trump administration about who wrote yesterday's scathing anonymous op-ed in the New York Times. An unnamed senior White House official claims to be, quote, part of the resistance inside the Trump administration, adding that there were, quote, early whispers within the cabinet of invoking the 25th Amendment, and the root of the problem is the president's amorality. And, quote, the president continues to act in a manner that is detrimental to the health of our republic. All of which drew this response from President Trump himself yesterday.
The failing New York Times has an anonymous editorial. Can you believe it? Anonymous. Meaning gutless. A gutless editorial.
This hour On Point, is it a gutless editorial? Is it cowardice? Or could there actually be a constitutional crisis brewing in the White House right now? We'll get reaction to that anonymous op-ed. Join us. What was your reaction? The president tweeted, quote, treason with question marks. Is that suggestion correct? Or is it evidence of a legitimate constitutional crisis right now? Should this person, though, whoever wrote it, this supposed senior administration official, should they have come forward if the concern is as grave as it seems to be? You can join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, let's start first right in Washington at the White House. Kristen Welker joins us. She's White House correspondent for NBC News. Kristen, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks so much for having me.
What is the mood in the West Wing right now?
Well, it's tense, and I think the challenge for the president is he doesn't know who he can trust. And you raise the question, is this a constitutional crisis? It's certainly a crisis on some levels. This is a commander-in-chief who's looking around at an administration that's filled with a lot of finger-pointing right now. As you pointed out at the top, the vice president, Mike Pompeo, Dan Coats have all denied this. But who are the other senior administration officials who are coming under a microscope right now? Everyone's reading the language of that op-ed very closely, trying to find clues. I spoke with someone very late last night who said, look, we're basically closing ranks. We're in this together. We're trying to focus on the policy. Of course, they have this critical election coming up. So I think that they are trying to pivot and stay focused on the policy to sort of move beyond this. But the president's reaction, according to a lot of sources who we spoke to, when this came out, was volcanic anger. He erupted, and you heard that. You witnessed that in those very public comments that he made, that you played, in which he described this anonymous senior administration official as gutless. So this is a crisis on a number of different levels, and a lot of Republicans asking this question, Meghna, will it impact his ability to affect legislation, and how is it going to impact the midterms? Of course, that's the big question everyone's asking.
Right. So I want to explore that in a little more in just a second, but we have some more tape here from the president speaking yesterday at the White House, again, reacting to this anonymous op-ed.
Somebody in what I call the failing New York Times that's talking about he's part of the resistance within the Trump administration.
This person
this
works
is what we have to deal with. And, you know, the dishonest media, because you people deal with it as well as I do, but it's really a disgrace.
Okay, so that was President Donald Trump yesterday. We've got more reaction here from senior White House advisor Kellyanne Conway. She was speaking to Laura Ingraham on Fox News last night.
I'm not sure it matters. There are op-eds like that in the New York Times every day. It's just a different byline, or I guess a non-byline here.
So Kristen Welker, respond to that, because you heard Kellyanne Conway sort of saying, hey, this kind of stuff comes out of the New York Times all the time. Is this op-ed, though, demonstrably different?
I think it's demonstrably different. I think that that's the talking point that you're hearing from folks like Kellyanne Conway. I've had that same conversation with a lot of officials here within the West Wing. Why is this different? It's different because it's an op-ed written by a senior administration official who talks about the fact that there is a concerted effort among some here within the administration to effectively, and I'm characterizing what the op-ed author says, block or protect the country from the president of the United States. why is it so significant in addition to the fact that it comes in the form of an op-ed? Because it's coming on the heels of that remarkable blockbuster book, the excerpts of which we saw this week by Bob Woodward, Fear, of course, veteran journalist of Watergate fame. And it echoes something that Bob Woodward really honed in on, which is that there are some administration officials here who are, for example, swiping papers off of the president's desk. He cites Gary Cohn, former top aide Rob Porter, as having engaged in that type of activity to prevent the president from signing on to some policies that they deemed dangerous. So it sort of echoes that broader picture that we saw come to light in Bob Woodward's book. And remember, the president has talked about this deep state, his concerns about that. Well, look, the author takes that on head on. He says this isn't a deep state, but again, really tries to put the focus on we're trying to protect the country from a president who he describes as being unpredictable and at times a threat to the very country that he's governing.
Right. I mean, so the op-ed writer says many Trump appointees have vowed to do what we can to preserve our democratic institutions while thwarting Mr. Trump's more misguided impulses until he's out of office. And then, as you pointed out, Kristen, the writer says, this is not the deep state. This is the steady state. But on the other hand, these appointees are not elected. They weren't elected by the people of the United States. President Donald Trump was. So, I mean, who's really running the show here? It sounds like an anti-democratic, I don't know what to call it, going on inside the White House.
What an important point you raise. And that, I think, was something that we saw echoed in the statement that Sarah Sanders released yesterday. She said, look, this president was not only elected, he was elected by a wide margin. Who is this anonymous source? This person was not elected. And I think it gets to the heart of where we started this conversation. Is this in some ways a constitutional crisis? Mike Caputo, Trump aide, talking overnight, saying this is a coup. It's an administrative coup. He made those remarks on CNN. I've been talking to officials here. Do they see it as a coup? Not everyone is willing to go that far. But certainly there is concern about how effective this president can be if he has people who are actively working to undermine him and to undermine his agenda. Now, the president's answer to that, I came in, I vowed to drain the swamp, people are fighting back, we're going to win. So I think the end result of this, at least right now, may be that it adds some fuel to the fire of some of his core supporters. He's going to be back out on the campaign trail in Montana. He leaves today for that. And so I think that you're going to see him really beat the drum in that regard to try to rally his core supporters around him and say, look, folks, this is what we've been fighting against the entire time. But again, on a very practical level, does it make governing more difficult? And that's the question.
Kristen Welker, White House correspondent for NBC News, joining us from the White House today. Kristen, thank you so very much.
Meghna, thank you for having me.
Well, we got lots of comments coming in online here. A listener on Facebook calling themselves JP Frinks says, resistance inside the Trump administration sounds like a power grab by opportunists. Either stand up in the light of day with the force of law to stop him or remain complicit. There is no middle ground. Well, let's turn now to Eliana Johnson. She's White House correspondent for Politico, joining us from Washington. Eliana, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me. Great to be with you.
Pick up where Kristen Welker left off. There are some people who are calling this an administrative coup within the White House. Would you agree with that, or is that going too far?
I think those are legitimate concerns. And in fact, Bob Woodward in his book uses the same word, a coup by the president's aides. And I think the alternative to that, there's a history of presidential aides sort of protecting presidents from their worst instincts. It happened in the Nixon administration and it happened in other administrations. But that occurred to me with a Bob Woodward talking about former economic advisor Gary Cohn swiping papers off the president's desk. These are people, as Kristen mentioned and as Sarah Huckabee Sanders mentioned, who were not elected, trying to thwart the actions of the president who was duly elected. And it occurred to me, you know, that if the president wants to do his will and the aides around him believe otherwise, it seems to me the president should be able to behave in the way he wants to behave. And the solution for some disastrous result of that constitutionally really would be impeachment.
Right. So let me ask you, I mean, can we imagine for even a microsecond this happening with any other administration in the history of the United States that, I don't know, in the Obama administration, if Rahm Emanuel were swiping papers off the president's desk, or Karl Rove was writing anonymous op-eds to the New York Times, that all of Washington wouldn't be in full-blown crisis mode, that Congress, you know, wouldn't be acting. That's the thing to me that seems, I mean, how much more of this, this isn't drip, drip, drip anymore. This seems to be a fire hose before the institutions around the White House begin to take notice.
I think that's exactly right. Again, you know, there is a history of presidential aides intervening to curb the worst instincts of presidents, either when presidents fell ill, that happened with Woodrow Wilson, where his wife was making decisions, or in the Nixon presidency, where his Secretary of Defense or his Secretary of State said, you know, not to issue any kind of military attack or carry out a nuclear launch order without checking with them first. But those were discrete moments in time. And this seems to be a much broader administrative effort by the president's allies. These are people, political appointees of the president, who are working constantly over a long period to thwart his intentions. And things seem to be getting worse, not better, in that regard. We haven't talked about the op-ed said that there were murmurs of invoking the 25th Amendment because the president was unable to discharge his duties. So I think that this is a real serious issue.
We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. We are talking about not only this anonymous op-ed from the New York Times from a supposed senior administration official. The headline there is, "I am part of the resistance inside the Trump administration." The writer says, "We believe our first duty is to this country, and the president continues to act in a manner that is detrimental to the health of our republic." But the writer also says they like the tax breaks. They like some of the policies coming out of the Trump administration. So maybe that's why they're hanging on. We want your response to that. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from On Point sponsor, Union of Concerned Scientists, creators of Got Science, a biweekly podcast where scientists break down why science matters to all of us. Got Science explores innovations in clean technology and climate solutions, the challenges of missile defense, and how science is critical to strengthening our democracy. Tune in on your favorite podcast app or at gotsciencepodcast.org.
Hey, Tamara.
Hey, Domenico. All week long, Brett Kavanaugh will face his Senate confirmation hearings.
Yeah, he's President Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court, and there are going to be a lot of questions about how he could transform the Supreme Court for a generation.
The NPR Politics podcast will be following those hearings, and we'll hop in the studio every day to break down what you need to know.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking about that anonymous op-ed that appeared in the New York Times by a supposedly senior administration official in the Trump administration that calls the president a danger to national institutions and to the nation. There's been a lot of response to this op-ed. The president obviously extremely angry and frustrated about it. From other corners of the American political establishment, former Secretary of State John Kerry spoke to Anderson Cooper on CNN last night and said this.
We have a presidency which is off the rail. This is unbelievable. This is a presidency that this is a genuine constitutional crisis.
Well, also on CNN, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham defended the president.
To those who believe that this man is a fool, that this man is crazy, that there's something wrong with Donald Trump and it's just the people around him that keep us safe, you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I'm joined today by Eliana Johnson. She's White House correspondent for Politico. She joins us from Washington. Joining us now is Heather Cox Richardson. She's a historian of American politics at Boston College and also author of To Make Men Free, A History of the Republican Party. Heather Cox Richardson, welcome to On Point.
It's always a pleasure, Meghna.
Okay, so first of all, Eliana was pointed to a part of the op-ed just before we took a break that I want to explore with both of you. Here's the paragraph. It says, Given the instability many witnessed, there were early whispers within the cabinet of invoking the 25th Amendment, which would start a complex process for removing the president. But no one wanted to precipitate a constitutional crisis. So we will do what we can to steer the administration in the right direction until, one way or another, it's over. Your reaction to that part?
Well, we are in a constitutional crisis for sure. And one of the things that astonishes me about the discussions we're having now is the fact that people who are in positions of power are ignoring their primary oath, which is to the Constitution. Our Constitution is our body of laws on which our entire society is supposed to operate. And there are mechanisms in place for getting rid of any kind of a leader who is not able to fulfill his or her duties.
This person is saying they're putting a country over the administration as being the quiet resistance thwarting the president's worst impulses. They're doing just that.
Well, I'm with the people who think quiet resistance that by unconstitutional means constitute a soft coup. That in fact, if they believe the president is not able to fulfill his duties, they should be invoking the 25th Amendment, which is a mechanism that Eisenhower first came up with, although it's passed later, to get rid of a president who is incapacitated and doesn't realize he or she is. They could either invoke that, or the other great part of our current constitutional crisis is that Congress is refusing to do its duty, which is that it is supposed to impeach somebody who can't do the job that he or she is supposed to be doing. And both of those things are not happening, which is deeply problematic. And I'd also like to add another piece here that we haven't discussed, and that's that while this is going on, this profound crisis, this unprecedented crisis in American history, we also have the fact that the Senate is pushing forward with the confirmation hearings for a Supreme Court justice.
For Brett Kavanaugh.
And that strikes me as part of a package and one that we should be looking at as a whole as opposed to simply looking at the crisis at this moment in the White House. I think we're looking at a crisis of democracy.
A crisis of democracy. Eliana Johnson, what's your response to that?
You know, the op-ed in The Times seemed to me to verbalize, I think, what 70 or 80% of Republicans felt about the president. In foreign policy, you had, during the campaign, dozens of Republicans experienced in foreign policy signed letters saying that they didn't think Donald Trump was fit to be president. You didn't have Republicans experienced in domestic policy or in other realms come out and sign letters, but certainly the letters that foreign policy experts, longtime Republican foreign policy experts signed, verbalized, I think, what most Republicans felt about Donald Trump. The trade-off others made was, you know, we'll have somebody who's unsuitable for this office, but we'll get Supreme Court justices that we want. We'll get tax cuts. They rationalized Trump's election in that way. And I think, though there aren't many Republicans, of course, there are a group of Trump loyalists like Steve Bannon and Stephen Miller. There aren't many Republicans who would disagree with the views expressed in that New York Times letter. The trade-off that Republicans made was getting a Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court, getting a Neil Gorsuch, and getting tax cuts. And I think you see that acknowledged in the Times op-ed.
So can I just jump in here? Because I think this is – you're right. This tension or trade-off is absolutely written through this entire op-ed. I have so many questions about it, though. I mean, first of all, what does it say about those very Republicans? And I'll point right to the writer of this op-ed, whoever this person is, about their respect for the office of the presidency of the United States. If they're willing to have someone who they believe is unfit for that office simply because it can get them, the Supreme Court justices, tax regulation, deregulation, all of that, it seems to show a fundamental disrespect for the meaning of the White House itself.
You know, I think from covering the campaign and talking to many of these people, and I should acknowledge there were a group of Republicans who were never Trumpers and yes, refused to vote for either candidate. But I think the response that you would get from many Republicans was they didn't believe either candidate was fit for this office. And they refused to vote for Hillary Clinton as well. And that exempting the never Trumpers from that, but they said we're faced with two candidates, neither of whom we believe is fit to hold this office. They didn't believe Hillary Clinton was honest. They thought she they thought that her use of a private email server made her unfit for office. And so they thought, you know, between these two candidates, we're going to pick the lesser of two evils.
Right. So, but here's how it's written in the op-ed. Heather Cox Richardson, the writer says, on the one hand, we want the administration to succeed, and we think many of its policies have made America safer and more prosperous. On the other hand, the president continues to act in a manner that is detrimental to the health of our republic. Later still, on the one hand, there are bright spots: effective deregulation, historic tax reform, a more robust military, and more. On the other hand, President Trump's impulses are generally anti-democratic. How can you have it both ways?
Well, let's start by saying we really don't know a lot about this document. You know, as a historian looking at this document, there are things that jumped out to me. And one of them was not who wrote it. What I was more interested in is what the content was. And there were a number of things in the content that worried me. There were pieces of it that looked very much to me like a coup, like a soft coup. The idea that the writers knew better what was good for the country than the people in the country did, and that they were operating in secret and we should all feel good about that. But the other piece that worried me was exactly what you pointed to. What the author or authors, it looked kind of like a speechwriter to me who wrote it, what they are saying is that the program that pure movement conservatives, that is people who hark all the way back to Barry Goldwater and even before that to William F. Buckley Jr., want is a government that does not involve itself in any way in business deregulation, in taxation, in basic social welfare, and that pours money into the military. All of those things are things that Donald Trump has done extraordinarily well while he's been in power. So what this document said to me is that, listen, what we really are doing is we're taking the country down this ideological road, even though we know that it's not popular. In fact, we know that in America today, most Americans actually like the things that the government does when it intervenes to regulate business and to provide a basic social safety net. So to me, this was an ideological document that said, we need these policies in place so we're willing to bend or even break the rules of the Constitution. And I'm a constitutionalist. I don't like it.
I mean, at what cost?
At the cost of democracy, to my mind, because our democracy is based on that Constitution, which does have checks and balances in it for exactly this eventuality. They're choosing, whoever wrote this or whoever backed this, is choosing not to use our constitutional means to rectify what is truly a horrific situation. And that's not just the writer of this document, but also Congress, which, as I say, is supposed to represent us, the people, and has apparently decided not to do that.
Eliana Johnson, there are a lot of callers who want to join us. I want to get to them, but I want to first give you just a chance to respond, however you may, to what Heather Cox Richardson just said.
Yeah, you know, what struck me about the op-ed and about some of the anecdotes that have emerged in the excerpts of Bob Woodward's book is the author of the op-ed and the Gary Cohn anecdote swiping an order to pull the U.S. out of NAFTA talks about trade. The author is clearly a proponent of free trade. Mm-hmm. Gary Cohn swiped that document, would have pulled the U.S. out of NAFTA. Donald Trump campaigned on pulling the U.S. out of what he perceived as bad trade deals. Now, that may or may not be popular, but he was elected on that platform, and it really jumped out at me that aides around him who believe they know better and, you know, whatever one's opinion might be, are thwarting campaign promises that he made and wants to follow through on. And that seemed that seemed to me a real issue with the democratic process.
Yeah. We're talking about this anonymous op-ed that appeared in the New York Times yesterday by a supposed senior administration official from within the Trump White House, headlined, "I am part of the resistance inside the Trump administration," and all the questions that it raises about whether or not we are in a constitutional crisis, what the state of the White House is, and as we're, you know, and we're going to talk about in a minute, whether or not this should have been anonymous at all to begin with. Lots of callers want to join us, so let's get to them. Patrick is calling from Greenville, Tennessee. You're on the air, Patrick.
Yes, I agree with your previous person who was speaking. However, we have to be very careful. Number one, the New York Times, when they print the article anonymously, they are assuming the responsibility. And I feel that we have to be careful in that this may be a way of dividing our country even more. We have destabilized governments in Latin America for years and years. And this may be coming back to bite us and using the same tactics on us. Trump is a businessman in the political world, and I think he is doing more in such a short time than all the politicos do, living off of other people's money. And that's pretty much all I have to say. I agree very much with your previous speaker.
Patrick, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Brian, who's calling from Superior, Wisconsin. You're on the air, Brian.
Yes. Hello. Thanks for taking my call. My point is our great Constitution is only as good as the people that are there to uphold it. I do not believe this is a coup. I think it's a last-minute vote of conscience. But my point is Congress and the Senate have a constitutional duty to keep the executive branch in check. I do not believe they're doing that. And the point that I'll use to cement that is when the president tweets that the DOJ should not have interfered with the two Republicans that are up for office when they're charged with the crime.
Right. She's talking about those recent indictments. Exactly. Brian, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but we just got a couple of minutes before the break, and I want to get responses to what you're saying from our guests. Heather Cox Richardson, let me just start with you. Again, Brian bringing up this point that we touched on earlier, but he's seeing the failure here being in Congress.
Congress has rolled over and played dead. And this is astonishing because this is a piece that the founders were not prepared for because they assumed that every man would want power in some way. And if you look at the people who are in Congress nowadays, it seems like that's a logical thing to think. To me, again, as a historian, without pretending in a way that I don't have a dog in this fight, although, of course, I'm alive in America today, so I do, I look at this and I think, why? Why is Congress not stepping up and insisting on checking the power of a president who seems clearly to be running amok? And that is a fascinating question
and deeply disturbing.
Isn't
part of the answer what we were just talking about, that there are these policies and packages that that the Republican-led Congress wants to put in place? And as we were all just discussing, they see President Trump, even in his imperfections, as the vehicle to get those done.
I think that's exactly right, that they want the policies that he is putting in power. But I would also say that we have had administrations that look somewhat like this before in the 1890s and the 1850s and the 1920s to some degree as well. And in each of those cases, Congress critters, if you will, in Molly Ivins's term, protected their prerogatives, and they are not doing so now. I think the thing we're not talking about and don't have time to in this segment is the Mueller investigation. I think when we start digging really into Congress, there's going to be a lot more there in their operations that we're not talking about when we talk about this op-ed and the fact Congress is not responding to the president the way it ought to.
Eliana Johnson, let me turn back to you because the earlier caller we had said that, you know, he believes that one of the results of this op-ed and all this news we've been having over the past few days is to simply further divide America. Does he have a point?
I'm not sure that the op-ed will further divide the country. I think the country was pretty well dug into its partisan ways before this. What I do think the op-ed will do, ironically, and this raised questions in my mind about why the author would go forth and publish it if the author's true intent was to contain the president, is I do think the op-ed will further divide the White House against itself, the president and his aides, because the president has already begun a furious hunt for the leaker. This will surely make the president more distrustful of the aides around him. And the White House is Politico, my publication, published a piece last night saying the White House was in total meltdown mode. But if the goal of the op-ed writer was to contain the president and reassure the country that there are aides around him checking his worst impulses, I think the result of this will only be to exacerbate some of those worst impulses by making him more paranoid.
I mean, can you blame the president for being, if indeed,
full
meltdown mode?
I mean, this was
who
this
can
was,
he trust now?
Right. I mean, this was a blaring advertisement in the most widely read publication in the country and one that the president pays special attention to, being from New York himself, that There are people around him, including members of his own cabinet, working to thwart his intentions and considering invoking the 25th Amendment to push him out of office.
Heather?
Yeah, and I'd like to go back to what Patrick said. Again, as a historian, I've got my doubts about this document. That is, it's a crucially important document. It certainly was written by somebody to accomplish something. What exactly that is, I think, is still a bit murky, and I would approach it with some kinds of caution. I do think one of the things that does come out of it, though, between that and the Bob Woodward book, is it's very, very difficult for me to see how President Trump can go forward and still continue to be in any way an effective president, and that is a crisis of its own. Aside from the constitutional crisis, the larger constitutional crisis we're looking at.
Well, you're hearing Heather Cox Richardson. She's a historian of American politics at Boston College and author of To Make Men Free, A History of the Republican Party. Also with us today is Eliana Johnson, White House correspondent for Politico. She's joining us from Washington, and we're talking about this anonymous op-ed written by a senior White House official calling him or herself, "I am part of the resistance inside the Trump administration." Going to get more calls when we come back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
As soon as you wake up, you need the latest. That's why Up First is here. It's NPR's morning news podcast. In just 10 minutes or so, you can start your day informed. Listen to Up First on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the anonymous op-ed from a supposedly senior White House official that appeared in the New York Times, headlined, "I am part of the resistance inside the Trump administration." It calls the president and says he continues to act in a manner that is detrimental to the health of the republic. It says that there isn't a deep state surrounding the president, but a steady state in terms of Trump appointees who are actively trying to thwart, quote, "Mr. Trump's more misguided impulses until he is out of office." I'm joined today by Eliana Johnson, White House correspondent for Politico, and by Heather Cox Richardson. She's a historian of American politics at Boston College. And I want to play some tape here because there's a lot of reaction to the fact that this op-ed was published anonymously. Here's former Florida Republican Congressman David Jolly speaking on MSNBC to Nicole Wallace last night.
If you're the author of this column and you truly want to effectuate change, you want to answer to a higher calling, you want to do something in service to the nation, you have to come forward and sign your name to this. Hiding behind anonymity, while it's comfortable, is ultimately going to ensure that this goes nowhere.
Douglas Brinkley, professor of history at Rice University, specifically around presidential history, he was on CNN last night and said this.
This person has stuck their neck out, and it's, I think, a public service. And the fact that Donald Trump didn't ignore it and started screaming the word treason and now wants the New York Times to cough up a reporter, we're living on Nixon times 10 right now.
Heather Cox Richardson, I just want to quickly get a reaction from you because there's tons of callers and I want to get to them. But Nixon times 10?
Yes. That's a quick reaction. Yeah, we're in a full-blown constitutional crisis, and we have never seen the like since perhaps the 1850s. As I say, we do have mechanisms to take care of situations like this, and we do have a constitution that is still a viable option. Mm. But right now, we're all playing fast and loose with the fundamentals of American democracy, and we need to get back to them.
And Eliana Johnson, to Florida Congressman, former Congressman David Jolly's point that because the op-ed was written anonymously, it's going to ensure that it goes nowhere. Your response to that?
I'm not really sure that the op-ed was meant to go somewhere. I'm not sure what Jolly was referring to, but I think the op-ed was intended as a sort of it wasn't an isolated incident. It came on the heels of Bob Woodward's book that contained a lot of reporting suggesting that the president's aides don't have a lot of confidence in him and do things to rein in his worst instincts. And the op-ed, I think, was intended to buttress that and to serve as a reassurance to the American people that even people appointed by, nominated by, handpicked by the president are working to rein him in.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Anne, who's calling from Sarasota, Florida. You're on the air, Anne.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Observation and maybe a prediction. Observation is that I think the op-ed is a response to what was called Republican patriots. Where are you? This is a crisis of unconstitutional proportions. And I think that this op-ed took considerable introspection and courage. I want to make a prediction that Trump will handle this like he's handled all of his other marketing ploys in the past. He will create a diversion so that the dialogue goes away from what we are all talking about now, and he will create a problem that he will market that only he can fix. But this is a call from patriots who vote country instead of party, and it was a beacon of hope to a lot of us Republicans who have been praying that the madness stops and that the veil lifts from people's eyes.
But Anne, let me just ask you really quickly, how does this, in your view, stop the madness?
Because it's opened up a Pandora's box of discourse. People think these things that the op-ed states. People hoped, as Sally Yates said in her testimony, that there are people who realize that he is colossally unfit for office. And this is going to further the discourse that and give people hope.
Yeah.
And maybe the veil will be lifted.
I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but thank you so much for your call. Anne there saying, as a Republican, I believe that this op-ed is going to lift the veil from people's eyes. Let's go to Marlene, who's calling from Charleston, South Carolina. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am a diehard Massachusetts Democrat by birth, and I think this op-ed did nothing to make me feel an ounce better. If this so-called patriot wants to serve their country, they should bring their concerns to Congress. I'm disappointed that the president even mentioned it. He should have just said, it's ridiculous. And I'm not saying I support this president, but it did nothing to make me feel better.
Marlene, thank you for your call. Let's get one more in here. Don is calling from Whetstone, Kentucky. You're on the air, Don.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. This constitutional crisis, could I get someone on your panel to give me maybe, I don't know, 3-4 specific examples of the crisis, constitutional crisis? As far as the op-ed goes, I actually read it this morning. I think anyone who's on like a talking head on TV, I think any one of them could have written it, and there's, you know, a couple hundred of those. I think anyone inside of D.C., New York, whatever, anyone could have written that article. And for the Times to publish it anonymously just proves that what a lot of us out in the middle of nowhere know already, they're just the National Enquirer, only they've got suits and ties. But to relieve the suspense for everyone, actually, it's I, Don from Whetstone. I wrote the op-ed. Thank you.
Thanks, Don. Much appreciated. Now we know. Appreciate your call here. Let's bring in another voice. Brian Cult is joining us now. He's professor at Michigan State University College of Law. In May, he wrote an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal titled 25th Amendment, Forget It. We've got a link to it at our website, onpointradio.org, and he's joining us from East Lansing, Michigan. Brian Cult, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Magna.
So I wanted to bring you in here because we've had a lot of conversation this hour about that particular section of this op-ed that said there were murmurs, whispers about whether or not the cabinet should invoke the 25th Amendment in the early months of the Trump administration. You wrote, forget about it. Why?
Well, I think, as the op-ed writer said, it wouldn't work. It would make things worse. The 25th Amendment, Section 4 in particular, was designed for a very different situation. It was designed to make sure that if the president was incapacitated, that there was someone who could pick up the reins immediately. And they wanted to make sure that it wasn't used for presidents who were unfit or who were inept or any of those other things. We already have a process for getting rid of presidents who were doing a bad job. This was supposed to not supplant that, and so they designed it so that if you tried to use it for that, it wouldn't work.
And so then the alternative being impeachment?
Impeachment and elections, yeah.
Okay, so what? So then what would we do, what would you recommend happen now with this circumstance where we are today with, you know, all this information, granted some of it from anonymous sources, others, you know, we have 18 months of reporting from the White House about what seems to be a president who his own closest aides or senior officials are actively trying to, thwart him. I mean, do we just sort of survive with that until the next election?
Well, that's what we've been doing. For better or worse, that's what the structure of the Constitution wants us to do. Politically, day to day, if the president is struggling in this way, then he will be less able to effectuate the problematic things, the things that others in his administration find problematic. But trying to toss him aside when he's still in a position, he's not unable to discharge his powers and duties as the 25th Amendment requires. He's able to fire people. He's able to challenge the Section 4 invocation, and you need two-thirds in the House, two-thirds in the Senate, more than you'd need for impeachment to thwart him. So, yeah, politically, it's just a game of how much political power does he have, how effectively can he deploy it, and if he can't, then that's just a story about politics. The Constitution doesn't really enter into it. If the Democrats win in November, win the House, and impeachment looks more realistic, if Mueller comes forward with things, then maybe. But the thing to remember is that the reason that impeachment hasn't gained more traction to this point is that President Trump still has a very solid base of support, mm-hmm. and congressional Republicans are not politically able to cross those voters. They would lose in their primary. So they're afraid of that Republican base. As long as that strong base is there, and as long as the Republicans in Congress aren't willing to risk offending those people, then probably nothing's going to happen but muddling through.
So let me just ask you a quick question, Brian Cult, because I want to get Heather Cox Richardson's response to this. But, so is it overwrought to say that we may be in a constitutional crisis right now?
Well, you know, people mean different things when they talk about a constitutional crisis. It's definitely a political crisis. It's definitely a crisis that involves the Constitution. But when I think of a constitutional crisis, I think of a situation in which we have something very severe happening and the Constitution doesn't tell us what to do. If we have impeachment, that would be interesting. It might be a crisis, but the Constitution would tell us what to do, and we would just ride those procedures through and see what happens.
Okay.
Same with the 25th Amendment.
It does seem to me that there's a very fine hair being split here. But Heather Cox Richardson, what's your response?
Well, I think that Brian's right, that the 25th Amendment is really a lovely thing to fantasize about, but it would almost never come into play unless you had a president who was suddenly afflicted with a stroke or something. The other piece, though, is interesting because the obvious place to remedy the situation we have now is impeachment. That's what that was set up for. There's a long history of impeachment I will spare you with. But the next that's not going to happen either. Aside from the strength of the Republican base, there's also issues of the actual votes in the House of Representatives where an impeachment process would start, and then in the Senate, which resolves itself into a courtroom, and it's got it would have a trial there. And we have never yet had a president convicted of the charges under which he was impeached. But that being said, the next ditch is the voters. And we have an upcoming election coming here, and everybody keeps saying, oh, we just need to vote these people out. But this is why I am sort of beside myself over what I consider a Democratic crisis. With what we know of voter suppression, which really began in the 1990s and took off in about 2000 and has gotten significantly worse since then, and with gerrymandering, which was a deliberate attempt of a certain coalition of people to enact what they called Operation Red Map in 2010 to redistrict key states, we have a situation here now where even when the Democrats get a majority of up to 7 points, they are not going to control Congress. And what really concerns me is that the sheer number of people who need to get out and vote to overcome the situation we're at now might be unattainable simply because of voter suppression and gerrymandering.
So those issues of gerrymandering, of course, long predate President Trump. But your point taken. Eliana Johnson, earlier in the show, you were actually talking a little bit about this, about the timing of this op-ed and the fact that we do have midterm elections just a couple of months away. Is that part of the picture here that, you know, we have someone from within the administration who's saying perhaps, you know, yes, things are disruptive in the White House, but because there are, you know, supposed adults in the room, Americans should take heart, and there doesn't need to be upheaval at the ballot box in November.
I don't think that the author of this op-ed was making an electoral argument. I actually think the author was simply saying that there's less need for panic today, tomorrow, the next day than some might feel. And it was a short-term reassurance, not a prescriptive. I don't think the author was making a sort of prescriptive effort or telling voters to, you know, go out and vote to reelect Donald Trump. In fact, I would think that the thrust of the argument was suggesting the opposite, if anything.
Okay. But I guess maybe I didn't make my question wasn't clear enough, because the op-ed seemed to focus so exclusively on what the writer sees as the president's the issues with the president versus the issues with the GOP writ large, that has been supporting the president's policies. Do you see what I'm saying?
Sure. I think the focus really is on the president. The question, I think it's a fair question to ask, how will this impact the rest of the electoral landscape? You know, history would suggest that Democrats would take the House this fall. I think, if anything, the op-ed will help Democrats, because the op-ed does suggest that the president needs checks on him.
Mm. Well, Brian Cult, we've just got about 2 minutes to go here, a minute or so to go. A final thought for you today. I mean, where have we seen anything like this before in your mind in history? And how do we see this moment?
Well, I think we might have had situations like this in the past. What's changed now is that it's much more immediate that we find out about it. Anonymous op-eds, tweets from the president, Bob Woodward writing the book, we're finding all of this out in real time. That's what's different. And things are moving so much faster than I think maybe the Constitution was designed to cope with. Thinking about Watergate, it took 2 years before that resolved itself. And that's the speed at which the Constitution moves. And I think we have to remember that and just sort of hold on for what's going to be a wild ride.
Heather Cox Richardson, we just got a minute here. Your final thought.
I can't begin to make a prediction about what's going to happen, but I will say that I think that Trump has been seriously undermined, and it's going to be very difficult to see how we're going to play out the next 2 months before the election.
Hmm. Well, Heather Cox Richardson is a historian of American politics at Boston College and author of To Make Men Free, A History of the Republican Party. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Great to be here.
And Brian Cult, professor at Michigan State University's College of Law. He wrote an op-ed back in May in the Wall Street Journal titled The 25th Amendment, Forget It. There's a link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Brian Cult, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Eliana Johnson, White House correspondent for Politico, joining us today from Washington. Great to have you, Eliana. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And finally, the final thought I'm going to give to Elizabeth in Rhode Island, who wrote on our website, I must admit that I'm somewhat appalled with the actions of this anonymous op-ed writer. Clearly, the administration is crisis, but there are better ways to address the problem than subverting a properly elected precedent. A president, this sets a dangerous precedent. Keep your comments coming at onpointradio.org or Facebook and Twitter at onpointradio. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.